Pseudopod, episode 121, December 19th, 2008. This week's story, Blood, Snow and Sparrows, by Joshua Allen Deitch. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the increasingly festive horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and this week, well, I don't know about you, but nothing gets me more in the festive mood than drugs. Oh, maybe heroism and men walking down mean streets who are not themselves mean, but presumably just want some chips. Or maybe a pizza. Or perhaps a curry. Maybe just a DVD. Good thing, then, that this story, coming to us from Joshua Allen Deitch and originally published in the book of Dead Things from Twilight Tales, is right up that particular, unusually mean street. Joshua's first novel, Strangeness in the Proportion, is on the way from White Wolf, so if you like this, make sure you pick up a copy. In the meantime, prepare for another night in the trenches, because I have a story for you. And I promise you, it's true.
Blood, Snow, and Sparrows by Joshua Allen Deitch. Desdemona used to trace the stars with her finger, connecting the dots, naming her own constellations. I call upon her name, Desdemona. I call her name when I want to remember. Desdemona, who gave me 31 birthdays when I had none. Desdemona, who laughed and made snow angels on rooftops because the snow there was the cleanest, the closest to heaven. Desdemona, who made an angel of snow and blood in the dirty street on the day I lost her. I remember this now as Zeke struggles in my arms, anger and fear evacuating his body in crimson spurts, and my smile dislocates my jaw. Zeke, with the shroud eye, one eye glaucoma clouded, said it was his evil eye, said he could hex a body with a stare, cast a pestilence. But see, I knew better. I knew it was Zeke's dirty needles that killed the kids. And the night collapses with primate shrieks as Zeke tries to lift his bloody gun and... freeze. Too far. Backtrack. Once upon a time, Desdemona Mercer giggled in frustration and joy and chucked her astronomy textbook off the roof we made love on. She connected the dots and named her own constellations. And when the winter wind came, we folded in on one another, seeing how close we could get in my sleeping bag. We spent hours seeing how close we could get. Now I stare in the cracked mirror, and I connect the track marks on my body, form constellations with them. I name each one. But then the memories cut too deep, and I give up on the angry stars, burning in a pale Milky Way of collapsed veins, and I plunge the needle behind my eye and inject. I count the bullets, 1, 2, 3, and wonder how many good deeds it'll take. I love you, Des. I slam the clip home. I miss you, Des. The little vicious mechanical conspiracy of a switchblade lurks in my pocket. I'm coming home, Des. I drop the syringe, close my eyes in prayer, and wait for the drug to take hold. December wind slithers in through the cracks of boarded-up windows and thrills my pale, track-starred galaxy to goosebumps. In the winds of December, it's easy to remember. There are ghosts in December wind. Today is my birthday. Yesterday was my birthday. Tomorrow will be my birthday. When I feel the golden flash fire burn from synapse to synapse, I smile. Any fuckwit can shoot up heroin or PCP. But creation. See, that's art. Desdemona said that if I applied myself more, I'd make a great artist, or maybe a chemist. Desdemona once told me that medieval alchemists tried to turn lead into gold, and I know that the dealers dancing the alley's shadows would kill to know how I transmogrify the chemicals and narcotics, spin caustic shit into gold liquid fire. But it's my recipe, my cocktail, my alchemy, and I'll never tell, though the dealers would murder their mothers to know. I never knew my birth mother. I was born in a heroin apartment, spat out from a heroin womb, in my birth month of December. Weeks went by before my mother's head cleared enough to take me to the hospital. She couldn't remember what day I was born on. The other orphans teased me, the boy with no birthday, told me I had no soul. And I grew, and I developed under that assumption, strong and hollow, a predator in the jungle. I swam through an ocean of chemicals, blood, and screams before I found Desdemona. "Happy birthday, Gabriel," she would say. Everyone had always called me Gabe, but she called me Gabriel. She said I was named after an archangel. "You have a soul, Gabriel," she would say. "How do you know?" I'd respond, tracing her tattoos with a forefinger. Here, her smile spelled mischief as she placed her eye on my belly button. "I can see it through here." Too deep. I kicked the mirror, and millions of tiny me's rained down onto the filthy floor. I raise my gun, aim it at the luminous broken angel above. I yell at him, tell him his boss is a bastard for what he did. But I don't pull the trigger. The broken angel, busted and incomplete, is the last beautiful thing in here. The only remaining stained glass window left, my only company squatting in this burnt-out church. Desdemona wouldn't break it. Desdemona celebrated my birthday every day during December. She called it my birth month. She ignored the fake date that social services had given me as a consolation prize for being shat into the world. She gave me 31 birthdays when I had none. That was her alchemy. She could turn blackness into gold. With my cocktail burning in my head, I leave the church. With the gift of my alchemy burning in my brain pan, I begin to time travel. Suddenly, I'm blocks away from the old church. My vision bends in waves of dream alchemy as lines fade away and colors bleed into one another, chromatic orgies of a melting wax world. Desdemona liked to take me to museums. Once she showed me a row of expressionist paintings. My cocktail turns my surroundings into expressionist art, and it takes me a minute to recognize the street. This is where I pushed my first dope. The other kids played football, and I was earning. I don't remember my first customers. They were older than me. I remember the cicadas screaming. I felt sorry for them. They spent decades getting ready, underground, earning their wings, whispering to each other, speculating what wonders they'd see above. But, see, when the time came and they ascended, it was just a fucking die. They'd earned their wings just to fucking die, and they were screaming in chainsaw decibels at the unfairness of it all. My cocktail plays funhouse pranks on my ears, and I almost jump when I hear a dragon approach. But the L train passes overhead, turns a corner, and the rickety sounds fade into a marching skeleton parade. It starts snowing again. Desdemona wore a black leather jacket, a man's jacket, many sizes too big. I used to watch, fascinated, at how gracefully she swam in that jacket. Pale skin, contrasting dark leather, hair so blonde it looked white. My snow angel. Cicadas and ghosts make a haunted house of my head when Zeke shows up. Across the street, standing under a flickering light, his evil eye casting hexes this way and that. He's waiting. A deal is going to go down. I know his satchel is full of contaminated needles. He's Santa Claus of the plague. I wait in the alley shadows. I check the gun and the knife. But it's hard to be quiet when my alchemy circulates in my blood, when my brain screams cosmic secrets in my ear, and I'm suddenly afraid Zeke might hear my heart pounding. "Gabriel, the archangel, whispered secrets to you in the womb," she said to me.
"Secrets?"
"Yeah, it's Gabriel's job to watch over the unborn, and he whispers to them, tells them all the secrets of the universe."
"Then how come I can't tell you those secrets now?"
"Because he put a finger to your lip," and she smiled and placed her finger against my lip, "and he said, shh, and that's how you got that little dent under your nose."
In the shadows, I clamp my mouth shut so hard something pops, this high, and I feel like I remember all those angel whispered secrets, and it's all I can do not to start laughing. But laughing would alert Zeke, so I hunker down in the darkness and wait to do my good deed. I never deserved Desdemona. I'm not a good man. These hands have pushed junk and a rainbow plethora of poisons. These hands are stained. These hands have killed. What had I done to deserve Desdemona? But see, miracles are the undeserved gift. I never understood why she came to me, why she healed me, and she was taken away before I could figure it all out. She challenged me in a race. across the snowy street. The truck. The scream. The driver lived. But see, nothing is as graceful as a drunk. Nothing is as indestructible. I held Desdemona, and her arms and legs jerked spastically, with none of her grace. Eyes open but unseeing, she kept calling my name. Gabriel? 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 I answered, but she didn't seem to hear. Just called my name over and over, and I sometimes pound my head into walls at night, wondering if she died thinking I wasn't there for her, that I didn't answer. She just called my name, and her arms and legs jerked around, and she made an angel of snow and blood. The memories release me, and I look to Zeke and see I've almost missed my chance. Three kids in gang colors are already there, and negotiations are underway. Three kids, and they don't look like they're in high school yet. Three kids about to buy the plague from the man with the evil eye. See, Zeke is smart enough not to sell bad needles to repeat customers, but twisted enough to give them to others just for the thrill. Better than sex, he once rasped to me in a bar where the waitress had two black panda bear eyes. Getting inside stranger after stranger, poisoning their blood, and they don't even know it. People think monsters grown on chemicals and sent rampaging through the city are the stuff of science fiction, but see, Zeke's as real as cancer. The transaction underway, Zeke smiles like a slit throat, makes introductions, pleasantries, sets prices. The three kids open their mouths, and through my alchemy, I can see the slang and obscenities crawl out. Fanged moths flapping in the sodium light. Slang in the mouth is a dangerous thing in the jungle. Words evolve. Some fly into pop culture. Some burrow underground. Others grow hungry and cannibalize their brothers, grow extra limbs and claws, and change to survive in the jungle. I remember Desdemona took a class in street slang. Some people were outraged that it was even offered, didn't consider it a serious subject. But see, this is deadly serious shit. This is what proves your mastery in the jungle. If your growl has the right bite, other predators might not eat you. This is the shit that gets narc agents killed. How many undercover cops died to slang? How many of them knew their clothes and their mannerisms and their perps and their marks and their P's and their Q's only to come up short, impaled by a misplaced word, dangling and bleeding and dead? Kids have the most dangerous mouths, the quickest evolving slang, more fluid, and now these kids are letting fang-mawed predators hatch out of their faces, and some of these monsters I don't recognize. I used to know them all. But I've been away from the jungle. I was a predator. But maybe it's my time to go to the elephant's graveyard. But not yet. I still have a good deed to do. I lift my arm and take aim. Gunshots are loud, but misfires are deafening. Click, says my gun, apologetically. The tiny sound stops the night. Zeke and the three boys look over, and even the streetlight flickers, interrupted. Click, 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 click. Fuck. I drop the gun. The best laid plans. Zeke's slit-throat smile turns upside down, and he looks at me through his good eye, curses me with his evil eye, and stares me down with his gun barrel. Gabe? He laughs. Strings of words follow, but I can't follow them. My cocktail turns my brain into hummingbird heartbeats, a hurricane in a fucking teapot, and I can't decipher the words anymore. I charge. Zeke doesn't expect me to move this fast, to cover that much ground, but my alchemy is a beautiful thing. Zeke's mouth barks four letters. Zeke's gun barks a single syllable. The shot goes wide. I barely feel the burning caress along my shoulder as the grazing bullet kisses me and goes on its way, just like they always do in the movies. But bullets don't usually behave this way. Bullets aren't usually this polite. I time travel through an impressionist stream punctuated by sounds, the crack of Zeke's wrist as I turn his gun on himself, the distant explosion of the bullet, the gurgle and suck of blood and air trying to move through the hole in Zeke's throat. Both of us go down. The world comes into focus. Bullets in the flesh can harsh any buzz. Zeke tries to lift his gun, but his arm won't obey him anymore. He sputters and gurgles, trying to form words. Maybe to curse, maybe to beg redemption, I'll never know. I press my finger to his lips and say, shh, leaving a red line between his nose and lip. Zeke's arms and legs flail in the whiteness, and I see the mark he leaves on the ground, and I wonder who this angel of blood and snow who haunts me is, and the flickering streetlight goes out. Blood is black by moonlight, and the dark angel in the snow looks up at me. Bad time metaphors hover out of reach when I realize the kids are talking, mutant slang directed at me. I look close and realize these are not kids. They've seen too much, done too much. They grew up too fast, stunted. One of them has a gun out. Maybe he's already made his first kill. None of them are concerned about the dead man. They just ask me if I'm willing to sell them the shit. Bathed in Zeke's blood, blood now cooling, I realize why superheroes don't exist. What do I say to these children who walk as men? They've heard every cherry-flavored anti-drug song. Christ, one of them is wearing a DARE t-shirt. How do you do a good deed in this place? I charge faster than sin, my alchemy coursing in my arms. I grab the DARE kid by the throat, slam him into a wall. His head skips off the brick like a June bug, and I slide him upwards, feet dangling off the ground. My switchblade hisses out of hiding, and I press the point to his throat, forming a tiny indent in his Adam's apple. Listen, you little cunt, you ever take the shit again, I cut you. You ever buy the shit again, I cut you. You buy a suspicious amount of NyQuil at the Quick and Easy, I cut you. I'll know, I'll hear about it. The guy selling might be one of mine. And you don't tell about me either, I don't exist, I'm a boogeyman. You break any of those rules, I will gut you with my knife. I know where you live, I'll come through your window, no one can stop me. I'll stick a needle through your chest and pump shit straight into your heart until it stops. And if I don't want to waste the money, I'll just cut your balls off, let you bleed out between the legs. It takes 15 minutes. You look at the shit again, and I swear to the devil I will be there, and your mother will sweat blood when she sees what I've done to you. His face is slick with my saliva, and my eyes bulge open so wide I can hear, over Tommy gun bursts of heartbeat, hear my skull sockets groan. I punctuate the words, press the knife a little harder, just enough to bring a trickle of blood, to make sure it sinks in. But it ain't easy. My alchemy is not good for fine manipulation. It's everything I can do not to shove the knife through the throat and 3 inches into the brick. I hear urine flow in his pants, smell the sour scent. It sank in. And they're off like a light, headed for home. And their faces aren't hard anymore. I cut down deep. They don't walk as men, they run as children. You can still reach the child in these lost kids if you cut deep enough. There are places inside, still afraid of the dark. And I time travel. I leave the money Zeke had on him at the doorstep of Mrs. Stone. She's sick, she's saving up for an operation. She's so nice to me when I come to the diner. And I time travel. I'm back at the church. The busted, stained angel looks down at me, but doesn't tell me if it was enough. He never does. I climb up on the roof. It's covered in white. It's snowing, and I'm bleeding. I know the blood's gone bad. Too many needles. I know there will be repercussions for tonight. A bullet or a knife will find me if I last that long. I don't have long, but it doesn't matter. I just need enough time to earn my wings. I go cold, watching the snowflakes melt in my blood. Desdemona. I call upon her name. I scream like a cicada. Desdemona. And the memories manifest, summoned by offerings of snow and blood. I can see her, swimming in her black jacket, an elf in an inkwell. I could never afford to give her diamonds. When I told her this, she just frowned, shook her head, and said, "Diamonds are forever, and snowflakes are more precious because they melt." And we held each other on the rooftop, and I gave her snowflakes. There's a dead sparrow on the roof of the church. I pick it up. The Archangel Gabriel sends a sparrow to escort each soul, Desdemona once told me. Wake up, I tell the cold sparrow. Wake up, I say, rubbing the sparrow, and my voice breaks. I hug the still bird to my chest and cry big tears. I bleed and I cry, thinking of some lost soul out in the dark waiting for a sparrow. Wake up. I fall down on my back in the snow on the rooftop, the cleanest snow, the closest to heaven. Clutching the sparrow, I make a prayer to one of Desdemona's constellations. I flap my arms and legs, and I make an angel of snow and blood in the dark.
There's a Frank Miller quote about the noir hero that I remember hearing for the first time in an episode of Criminal Minds. The noir hero is a knight in blood-caked armor. He's dirty, and he does his best to deny the fact that he's a hero the whole time. No one is perfect. No one. We lie, and we cheat, and we bicker, and we do things that we really shouldn't, but do anyway. Everyone, you see, everyone, is a citizen of Gotham City, not just the people who actually live in the very real, very small town of Gotham. That's the bad news. The good news is that every one of us gets to be Batman. And even better, we don't have to dedicate our lives to studying esoteric fighting styles, firing bullets into dead bodies so we can recognise wound patterns, or creating a backup personality just in case the front one is ever driven irrevocably insane. All we have to do is show up. All we have to do is try and be better than we are. And if you want to wear a Batman logo while you're doing it, work with a brilliant wheelchair-bound hacker and have a sarcastic English butler, then, well, you pretty much are Batman. Shouldn't you be out on patrol? Is it safe for you to be listening to a podcast whilst you're punching muggers in the head? Seriously? Also out on patrol, if patrol meant publishing some really kick-ass stories, are our sister podcasts, Escape Pod and Podcastle. Escape Pod, run by podcasting's own Bill Adama, Mr. Steve Ely, publishes some of the best science fiction I've heard, whilst Podcastle, run by the magnificent Rachel Swirsky and Anne Leckie, continues to not only publish three separate strands of fantasy, miniatures, standard-length stories, and four times a year giant stories, but also educate me in why fantasy is a vital, interesting, and immensely diverse genre. They're great podcasts run by great people, and they're free. Go check them out. And if you want to stop by the Feed the Pod link on Pseudopod on your way there, well, why would I stop you? We rely on you to pay our authors, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and please click on Feed the Pod. I promise you, every single one of our authors appreciates it. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod wants you to know it absolutely will not stop until you are dead. Actually, that's crazy. That's not true at all. We have no interest in making you dead, because if we did, who'd listen? What a ridiculous thing to say.
In late 2007, Lance Henriksen, the face and voice of criminal profiler Frank Black, told an audience of fans his interest in returning to the lead character from the award-winning TV show Millennium. He spoke of the very real potential for Frank to return and inspired a campaign by an international fan base to bring Frank Black and the world of Millennium into the 21st century. BackToFrankBlack.com is a platform for fans to voice their desire for the return of Frank Black. We urge fans of Frank Black to write a letter to Fox putting their desire on paper. BackToFrankBlack.com supplies basic templates to help you start your letter, as well as contact addresses and a variety of added features to personalise your voice. Back to Frank Black has the support of Millennium fans from all walks of life, including some of those behind the show itself, including Lance Henriksen, who as always offers his warm appreciation to the fans of Frank Black and Millennium. Help us help Frank get back. For more information, special features, updates and interviews, go to backtofrankblack.com.